This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
We like butterflies because they're pretty and they don't bite. The rest of the insects eat our crops, give us diseases, they bite us, they fly in our faces and our windshields. If we took a poll, maybe most humans would like to have an insect-free world, but be careful what you wish for. A new study shows insect numbers in parts of Europe have crashed just since 1990. The paper is titled More Than 75% Decline Over 27 Years in Total Flying Insect Biomass in Protected Areas. It was published in the journal PLOS on October 18, 2017. Our guest is Dr. David Goulson. He is a professor of biology at the University of Sussex in the UK. He is a co-author of the new study, and it's generated some alarm and some worrying headlines. From the deep south of England, Dave Goulson, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, people love cats and whales, but it's hard to find insect lovers. Why shouldn't we cheer if there are a lot less of them?
Well, actually, there are some insect lovers around, including me, but whether you love them or hate them, people should appreciate them, because insects are actually really important. They make up about two-thirds of all life on Earth, for a start. They do some really vitally important things, like pollinating our crops. About three-quarters of the crops that people grow around the world need pollinating. So if we didn't have flying insects, we wouldn't have tomatoes or strawberries or blueberries or any number of other things we like to eat. They do all sorts of other important things ecologically. They recycle dung, which may not sound very glamorous. It isn't, but it's important. They help to control pests of crops, and they're food for so many things. So we might not be very keen, or not everybody's keen on insects, but most people appreciate seeing pretty birds in their garden. But most birds feed on insects, as do bats, small mammals, reptiles, amphibians, and so on. So basically, if you were to take away the flying insects, pretty much the rest of life on Earth would collapse.
Well, let's get to the science you've just taken part in. The news reports certain types of insects are declining, sure, but why did you undertake this new study?
So I should say, for the sake of accuracy, that I helped write it up, but I didn't collect the data. It was actually collected by insect enthusiasts, amateur entomologists in Germany over the last 30 years. They've been running insect traps, they're called malaise traps. They just catch any flying insect that buzzes by. I'm not entirely sure why they started, probably just from their own amateur interest. But they produce this really interesting and disturbing data set, which basically shows that their daily catch, the weight of insects they caught every day, has plummeted. So over a 27-year period, it's fallen by 75%, three-quarters.
And these were not just in fields. These were in nature protection areas, I understand.
Yeah, they sampled 62 sites all across Germany, all of them nature reserves, mostly quite small nature reserves. But that almost makes it more terrifying that, these are supposed to be places where nature was being looked after. And so far as we know, it was. The nature reserves are still there. They're still being, managed for nature. And yet, despite that, three-quarters of the insects have disappeared somewhere.
Well, why? I mean, that's the big question we're all going to ask. And I guess, why don't we start with this? I thought that if bugs were in nature protection areas, they will do just fine, but apparently not.
Yeah, well, it is a slight mystery, but we can make an educated guess as to what's going on. We know generally, so there have been other studies of, we have pretty good data for how butterfly populations are doing in most European countries and to some extent in North America, and we know they've been declining. We know moths have been declining. There's been lots of anecdotal suggestion that flying insects on windshields are, the splats that you see are less common. And broadly, all of these declines have been put down to essentially the way the landscape has changed, particularly the way farming has intensified. We've lost lots of habitat. We use a lot more pesticides than we used to. There are very few weeds and hence very few flowers to be found in farmland. But of course, these insects were being sampled on nature reserves, not on farmland. So why am I making the link? Basically, because these are flying insects, they buzz about. There's nobody to tell them stay on the nature reserve, you'll be safe there. So we guess that they buzz off out of the nature reserve, and most of these nature reserves are surrounded by farmland, and that's pretty hostile terrain for an insect, so probably most of them just don't come back.
Well, right. You mentioned this is about flying insects, and I wonder if that's a limitation to this study. I mean, can we say that most insects fly, or do the majority of insects not fly?
The large majority of insects do fly, so the study incorporates most of them. There are some that can't fly or rarely fly. Let's say an earwig. The earwigs, they actually could fly, but they never do for some reason. And I would hazard a guess that if I'm right about the idea that flying insects are more likely to buzz out of the nature reserve, then obviously things that don't fly are more likely to stay put and more likely to be safe. So I would guess that perhaps declines, if there have been any, might be less in non-flying insects. But we simply don't have any data for them, so I am just guessing.
And I was going to volunteer, well, ants don't fly, but they do.
Well, of course, yeah, the workers don't. But the really important ones, the queens and the males, every year do fly around. So and they're the ones that start the new nests. So if they get lost, then that's going to have a big impact on the old ants.
Well, Professor Goulson, here on Radio EcoShock, we interview a lot of scientists about climate change, and maybe we assign too much to that as a single cause. I know your team looked into this. Did climate change help kill off these insects in Europe?
I think we can say pretty certainly that the answer to that is no. So we built kind of mathematical models to try and explain what was happening with the insects, and we got weather data, which we built into the models. And insect numbers do vary a lot according to the weather. Some years are better than others. They tend to like sunny, warmer years and are more common. But the overall decline, this 75% loss over 27 years, is not explained at all by changing weather patterns. And in fact, in reality, climate overall has changed very little. If you take a single 27-year period, there's almost negligible change in average temperature. And what change there is doesn't explain anything of what's going on.
It's strange because I remember being told that insect generations could reproduce more quickly in a hotter world, and yet this seems to be going in the opposite direction.
It's certainly true that warming climate will be an advantage to some insects, particularly pest insects, which are the ones that are kind of most adaptable. They're very mobile. They breed very fast. And, most insects are ectotherms. They basically thrive in warm weather. Of course, that's sort of oversimplifying rather a lot, because climate change isn't necessarily about it getting warmer so much as it getting more variable. And some of the extreme weather events that are being predicted under climate change will probably not be good for insects. So, you know, very heavy rain and storms and droughts and so on will be harmful. But if it were all just a gentle increase in temperature, then there certainly would be some insects that would enjoy that very much.
Homes and landscaping are designed to keep the bugs out. Is it possible that paving over Europe is one factor behind the insect decline that your team measured?
It certainly isn't helping. Yeah, absolutely. I do a lot to try and encourage people to plant their gardens with flowers to feed the butterflies and the bees and so on. And there's a lot of people interested in doing that, both over here and in North America. But there are also many, many people who would prefer to have their entire garden tarmacked or covered in decking. And of course, that doesn't help. It adds to this overall picture of there's just been less and less habitat left, less and less flower-rich, semi-natural places for them to go and find food or build a nest or whatever. I don't think probably paving over of gardens is a major player, but it's probably contributing.
My wife has me putting out a plate with some stones in it with some water so the bees have a way to get a drink as they work around through our garden.
Yeah, that does work. It's only really honeybees that you regularly see drinking, which are more or less a domestic animal. But it's certainly a very simple, easy thing to do. But better still, if you were to plant, a lavender bush, then you'd be providing lovely nectar for bees, and you'd probably see a lot more come.
Well, now, the other obvious culprit would be the vast amounts of pesticides sprayed by farmers these days. What do you think?
I would agree that pesticides are certainly contributing here, probably make one of the bigger players, one of the more likely culprits, if you like. It's certainly true that we use a lot of pesticides in the modern world. For the last 60, 70 years, farming has become very heavily reliant on a whole barrage of insecticides and other chemicals, fungicides and herbicides and so on. The herbicides enable farmers to grow crops without any weeds, hence without any flowers. And the insecticides, well, they're designed to kill insects, and some of them are very, very toxic to all insect life. Some of them are quite persistent, so they contaminate soils and streams and turn up in wildflower pollen, nectar, and so on.
In recent years, you've been co-author on a number of papers on the impacts of pesticides on bees. Has the mystery of bee colony collapse been solved?
I'm not sure it will ever be definitively solved. People will argue forever, but I think most people accept that the bee health problems we've seen are the result of several stressors all at the same time on the bees, that basically they struggle to find much food in the modern world. There aren't many flowers. They tend to have a very monotonous diet because they tend to often be forced to forage on one whatever crop happens to be in flower. They are then exposed to lots of pesticides, and we've also made life pretty tough by accidentally spreading bee diseases around the world, diseases and parasites. So if you add those things together, if the bee is hungry and infected with a foreign disease and poisoned all at the same time, then it's probably little wonder that they sometimes die.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. My guest is Dr. Dave Goulson from the University of Sussex. My initial protective rationalization of the serious result in your paper was, oh, that's just Germany. There's lots of bugs left here in Canada. Do we know if this decline in Europe reflects insects in trouble in other parts of the world?
That is a really good question. And obviously, the study was in Germany. It's always dangerous to extrapolate. And we clearly don't know exactly what someone would have found if they'd done exactly the same thing in Canada or the US or the UK. All we can say really is that where we do have data for butterflies, for moths, for birds, generally for wildlife, we know our wildlife is in decline on a global scale. The exact rate of the decline, you know, is obviously varies from country to country and place to place. But Germany's pretty typical, I would say. Certainly, knowing Germany fairly well, the landscape is very similar to the UK and much of Western Europe. The crops they grow are very similar. The pesticides they use are very similar. So my guess is if it's happening in Germany, then something similar is happening in other European countries. Extrapolating to Canada is a bit more tenuous. Who knows? But we do know that things aren't going well. And if this German decline is anywhere near typical of what's happening elsewhere in the world, then we haven't got much time to fix this. This is you know, we can't spend another 20 or 30 years doing some more studies to find out whether the same patterns are happening elsewhere, because 20 or 30 years' time on current trajectory, there'll be virtually nothing left.
Right. Is it possible we could enter a mass extinction of insects and not even realize it?
Well, I think we already have, and it's not that we don't realize it, but most people aren't that interested in insects. It's obviously very difficult to say when something goes extinct definitively, because, you know, proving the absence of a species is hard. And when it's an insect that most people don't pay any attention to, it's doubly hard. We've seen, for example, the first global extinction of a bumblebee in California, actually. This is Franklin's bumblebee. Hasn't been seen now since 2006 and is presumed extinct. And there are many more bees that have declined very dramatically and are in imminent danger of extinction. Obviously, we know a little more about bees than we do about other species. Butterflies are also in trouble. We've seen various extinction events. And so far as we can tell, it's accelerating. So we are going to lose more and more species unless we really find a way to tackle these issues.
Well, let's fast forward another 25 years. We discover we only have half the insects. How could that change the ecosystem and our economy?
Well, I mentioned bees earlier, and that's one of the simplest examples to kind of get your head around. You know, pollination is enormously important to humans. We simply couldn't feed everyone on the planet without the work that insect pollinators like bees do. So So if we were to lose half of them, then there certainly wouldn't be enough to pollinate all of our crops. And it's not that all the crops would suddenly fail. You know, the bees aren't going to all of them disappear overnight. But as their numbers fall, it will mean that the yields of crops fall, which will push the price up of food. It'll make it harder to produce, obviously. It'll mean food becomes scarcer in markets. And probably in, you know, relatively affluent Western countries, we'll still be able to afford to eat. But people in poorer countries may well not. And that's where the crisis would first be felt. But in the long term, you know, we've got a growing human population. We're going to have perhaps 10 billion of us, by maybe even more by 2050. And we simply won't be able to feed all of those people unless we look after insect pollinators.
Do you have ideas on what we could do to raise public support for protecting insects, or can we protect them?
Well, there is a growing interest in looking after insects. And more broadly, people have latched onto bees because I think bees make a great kind of flagship group for highlighting that actually, you know, some of these little creatures, they may be underappreciated, but they are important and we do need to look after them. And I think a growing proportion of the population kind of get that. But there are many, many people that don't think about the environment at all. And I think we need to somehow, I need to somehow, people who care about these issues and care about the future of our planet, that would agree that we somehow need to engage with more people. We need to get politicians on board. We need to get people to change their shopping habits. If people were to buy differently, there are lots of small changes that people can make to their lifestyles that would really help. So just to give you some simple examples, you know, the most of the pressure on wildlife comes about from farming. Well, if we didn't eat so much red meat, everybody knows this, but not many people actually act on it. If we didn't eat so much red meat, then that would greatly reduce the pressure on the land, because producing beef is a hugely inefficient way of feeding people. And also, if we reduced food waste, we are spectacularly wasteful. You know, we do all this intensive farming and then throw away about a third of all the food that we've produced, which doesn't make any sense at all. So, you know, we basically need to try and reduce our kind of our footprint, the impact we're having on the planet. And it can be done, but it would take, you know, action at all levels by everybody. And that's pretty difficult to achieve.
We may have to rewire our brains a little bit, too. We have insects in horror movies. We always talk about being at war with the bugs. If we see one, we want to stamp it out, even though we don't know what it is, whether it's friendly or not. We're going to have to change something about the human brain, almost.
Yeah, I'd love it if people just had a little more respect for the natural world. How we get that, I don't know. But it does worry me that people are increasingly detached from nature. They don't realize that, you know, at the end of the day, we are just one species on this planet. And we're lucky enough to share the planet with maybe 10 million other species. We don't know yet. We're still naming them. We've got a long way to go. And aside from all the useful things they do, many of them are stunningly beautiful if you look at them closely, or have really weird and wonderful and fascinating lives and behaviors and so on. Once you start looking, they're absolutely fascinating. But most people just don't look and don't appreciate that they're part of the natural world, like it or not, that we actually need all of these little creatures. How we get people to re-engage with nature, I do not know. But that's one of the many reasons that I write books and appear on radio shows, is to try and get that message across.
Well, tell us about a couple of your books.
Written mostly about the world of insects, bees in particular. Bumblebees are my absolute favorite. I've been studying bumblebees for about 25 years. So I wrote a book called A Sting in the Tail about the weird and wonderful lives of bumblebees. And most recently, I've got a new book out called Bee Quest, which is about exotic travels in search of the world's most weird and wonderful bees, which may sound terribly obscure, but people who've read it seem to enjoy it. It is basically my ploy to try and snag people's interest and draw them in and persuade them that actually that these creatures are really cool and we should appreciate what they do.
From the University of Sussex, we've been speaking with Professor Dave Goulson. He's the co-author of a new paper, More Than 75% Decline Over 27 Years in Total Flying Insect Biomass in Protected Areas. And you can find links to all this in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. Dave, thank you so much for volunteering your time with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.